Executive pay declines again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. A new survey out this morning finds executive paychecks at the 200 biggest U.S. companies fell about 1% in 2009, and that is on top of a 3.5% drop in 2008. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us live now. Hi, Mitchell. Mitchell Hartman, can you hear me? Okay, we'll get back to Mitchell as soon as we can. In another story, here's an industry that's actually doing pretty well. For-profit colleges like DeVry, enrollment is up at those schools despite some negative attention from regulators and the media. The colleges are answering their critics today with a new study of their own, and Amy Scott has that story from the Marketplace Education Desk.
For-profit schools have been criticized for their aggressive recruiting and high costs. Mark Pelish is with Corinthian Colleges, one of the largest for-profits. To fight back, he says Corinthian commissioned a study.
We thought it was important to get some real data that was rigorously put together to help frame a better, more accurate view of the sector.
Pelish says data from the Department of Education show that for-profit schools graduate a higher percentage of students than community colleges. Gail Mello is president of LaGuardia Community College in Queens. She says problems with data make it hard to compare schools.
But I think the thing you can compare is what it costs students and the kind of debt load students leave the colleges with.
Mello says a two-year degree in electronics and computer technology costs more than $42,000 at the for-profit DeVry College of New York. At her school, it would be just over $6,000. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Now let's do this morning's numbers. Signs of growing economic strength in China and Japan helped Asian stocks zoom more than 1% today, and European shares are also up 1% so far. Yesterday, the Dow lost 50 points and closed at 10,856.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents, offering a choice of companies and coverage. You can find a local agent at 1-800-WE-INSURE. By Citrix, offering GoToMyPC, providing remote access to a Mac or a PC from anywhere. More at gotomypc.com/market. And by Vanguard, reacting to the stock market is investing. Taking stock in long term is vanguarding. More about vanguarding at vanguard.com.
Before William Faulkner wrote The Sound and the Fury, he was a mailman. Didn't pay much, but he got to read the magazines he was delivering. The day jobs of famous authors is the subject of a piece in Lapham's Quarterly, a journal of history and ideas founded by the longtime Harper's Magazine editor, Lewis Lapham. Lewis, welcome to Marketplace.
Thank you, Bill.
And why are day jobs interesting to you?
They're interesting because it's very rare that people can support themselves simply on their writing. Faulkner, as you say, was a postmaster at the University of Mississippi. He was a terrible postmaster.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
He lost the mail. He spent the afternoons playing mahjong and sometimes going on a round of golf.
Charlotte Bronte worked for almost nothing, and apparently she didn't have time to write either.
No, she didn't. She was a governess, and she was being paid $1,800 a year.
That's today's equivalent money.
Yeah, that's today's equivalent. We're talking about the middle of the 19th century. And she had to pay extra to wash her clothes. T.S. Eliot was a colonial and foreign accounts clerk for Lloyd's Bank in London, and he was being paid to keep records of German debt. His famous friends, his poet Ezra Pound, they would say, Eliot, you're a great poet, why do you do this? And he said, because it gave him a feeling of security.
Security, of course, being a big issue for artists. Do you think today's modern authors are more or less able to support themselves with their writing?
Well, very few. I mean, if you look at the record, I mean, most writers today have some kind of university affiliation or a foundation grant.
How is the recession affecting writers?
It might make them see more clearly what kind of society that they're living in. A lot of the writing in the United States for the last 20-odd years has been very self-absorbed. the memoir instead of the portrait of the society. It might encourage writers to engage more with the society as a whole. It might force them to look more carefully at other people.
Lewis Lapham is editor of Lapham's Quarterly. Lewis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
This week, Pepsi announced it is racing to find new natural zero-calorie sweeteners, something that might help it get around a possible tax on sugary beverages. State and federal lawmakers are considering imposing a tax in the near future. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports not everybody thinks that tax would have the desired effect.
A study out this morning from the RAND Corporation doesn't quarrel with the idea that a national sugary beverage tax would bring in money, but RAND senior economist Roland Sturm says a 3-5% tax wouldn't convince people, especially kids, to cut back.
It's not the magic bullet.
He says a larger tax, maybe 20%, would be needed, and it would work best, he says, if it made the price of the product on the shelf look much more expensive than other drinks.
This tax would have to be visible. If the goal is not just to raise money, but the goal is to change consumption, then consumers need to be clearly aware of it.
As you might expect, the industry is fighting hard against the idea. Here's Kelly Brownell, who directs Yale's Center on Food Policy and Obesity.
I've never seen the industry respond so negatively to any proposal, which proves to me two things. One is that it's politically feasible. Otherwise, why would they worry about it? And second is that they believe it would really affect consumption.
Brownell says a national sugary beverage tax would bring in $15 billion a year. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And finally, the cost of a flight from New York to Omaha the first weekend in May has hit $1,400. Bloomberg News reports airlines have jacked up fares to Omaha that weekend because of Berkshire Hathaway's annual shareholder meeting, the meeting that Berkshire's chairman, Warren Buffett, calls Woodstock for capitalists. Apparently, demand is high that weekend, and the passengers can afford it. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.